Good afternoon, everyone, from Geneva, from the headquarters of the World Health Organization, and welcome to this virtual press conference today. Today, we will speak about a meeting that has just finished of the Strategic Advisory Group of Experts, or SAGE, as we call it, that ended yesterday, so we will hear about the results today. With us, we have Dr. Alejandro Cravioto, who is the chair of the SAGE. Also, we have Dr. Joachim Hombach, Executive Secretary of the SAGE, and who is with us here at WHO. We have also Dr. Martin Friede, who is Acting Director of Department of Immunization, Vaccines, and Biologicals here at WHO. So before I give a floor first to Dr. Hombach to give us and remind us what SAGE really is, let me just give you a few information on how you can participate in this press conference. If you have a question, please type 01 on your keypad, so you will be put then in line to ask questions. Audio file from this press conference will be available shortly after the briefing, and we also expect to have posted a short summary of the meeting sometimes tomorrow. So now I will start by giving the floor to Dr. Hombach to tell us more about what SAGE is, and then we will hear from the chair about the results of the meeting.
Thank you. So SAGE, or the Strategic Advisory Group on Experts, is WHO's top advisory body on immunization. So it's a group of external experts that advises WHO and the Director General on all matters that relate to immunization policy and vaccination strategies. This meeting, this group meets twice a year, and so we just finished the spring meeting, and it is working through working groups that develop over the year, over the time, detailed proposals and go through detailed evidence reviews that are then discussed with SAGE in a plenary meeting. Members act in their personal capacity. We have 15 members on the committee. And if you want to have more information on SAGE, I suggest you visit our website where you find all the information. All deliberations as well as all meeting background materials are publicly available on our website. Let me hand over to Professor Cravioto for an update of this spring meeting.
Thank you, Joachim. We just concluded our meeting, in which, as usual, we started with an overview of the global situations of vaccines and the general concepts of immunization. It is clear that we have had advances in spite of not meeting all the goals that were set up in this global vaccine action plan that started in 2010. But there is certainly a critical need to establish now a post-2020 strategy, which we will need to revise according to what has been achieved and the issues that are still pending. One of the things that is clear is that we're coming to the end of polio, and this last mile is taking us longer than expected. But it has been constrained by the different groups that are looking into how to certify that there's no more wild poliovirus circulation, and at the same time that the vaccine-derived viruses are controlled and the facilities that have these viruses are totally safe. In this sense, we hope that in the next years, we will be able to certify these aspects, and then we will be able to have a real idea of how long it will take for the world to get rid, finally, of this disease. We then reviewed also issues related to the situation of measles and rubella, and here, unfortunately, we have a number of outbreaks in different parts of the world. The most worrying one is the one in the Americas, where we have a large number of cases in Venezuela and in Brazil, which are putting in danger the situation that had already been achieved of elimination of measles in the continent. We hope that through the strengthening of the routine immunization in all the countries that are having cases and the use of campaigns, we will be able to have a control or a better control of these two diseases, both measles and rubella, in the next future. Here also we need to assess how we're going to deal with these two diseases in the next 10 years, since not all the aspects of elimination have been actually achieved. We reviewed two vaccines that had already been seen by SAGE in previous meetings, and we went back to see how they are faring and what is now in the pipeline for new studies. The first one is the malaria vaccine called RTSS, which was reviewed before, and the what came out of that review was a recommendation to do new pilot studies that would allow us to look into some of the safety issues and especially how the vaccine could be delivered in this four-dose schedule that has been proposed. Three new studies have been designed, and they will be starting soon. And these studies will be complemented with a framework in which we will be able to have all the information needed gathered from the beginning of the studies that will allow SAGE at the end of the studies to make new and more specific recommendations about the use of the vaccine. In the case of dengue, we have had new evidence that has come to complement the recommendations that had been made 2 years ago. And in this case, the working group was again convened to be able to review the evidence and see how this new data actually changes or not the recommendations made before. We have now clear information that the vaccine needs to be dealt with in a much safer way by using it exclusively or almost exclusively in people who have already been infected with dengue before. This idea of having this information requires for the people to be tested through a system that is not currently available, but that we feel will be developed in the next years, in which then it will be easy at the point where the vaccine is given to be able to determine whether the person has been infected before or not with dengue and then receive or not the vaccine. We continue to feel that the public health benefit of the vaccine as given according to the recommendations made 2 years ago by SAGE allows the public health use of the vaccine if the country decides to use it under this new premise of testing first the individuals to see whether they have been exposed to dengue before or not. I think that with that, we ended the program with a new proposal to see how we can give vaccines a much wider public health value. That is something that we will be developing in the next months to be able then to come with a proposal looking more at the aspects of how the vaccine fares as a public health tool and not just as an individual protection mechanism. I would leave it there and see if there are any questions regarding these topics. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Dr. Hombach and Professor Cravioto. Before we start with questions, again, a reminder that if you want to ask your question, please type 01 on your keypad to get into the line. We will have audio file of this press conference available shortly after, but because many journalists asked about a press release, we will have a short summary of the outcome of SAGE meeting available tomorrow. We will start with Helen Branswell, who is calling on and who is online. Helen, can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Can you hear me?
Helen, we can hear you very well, so please go ahead.
Oh, thank you very much for taking my question. I have a question related to the decision on Denvaxia. So the SAGE has clearly adopted the interim recommendation from earlier or late last year that said that this vaccine should not be used unless people are known to have had dengue previously. Sanofi Pasteur says this test that will be needed, for the point-of-care test, won't be available for another 2 or 3 years. Does that mean, in effect, that this vaccine will be very little used for the foreseeable years?
Thank you. Dr. Hombach, please.
Yes, thank you for that question, Helen. It is, of course, correct that we currently do not have a rapid diagnostic test, a point-of-care test that gives us information on past infection with dengue virus. It is also right that in the deliberations that SAGE made, SAGE favors and recommends, as I just pointed out, that the vaccines should only be used if a pre-vaccination screening with a diagnostic test has been carried out. Nevertheless, we also see the value. Nevertheless, we acknowledge the public health value if the vaccine is used without testing in very high dengue endemic areas. It is true that, I mean, there are tests available, but these are not point-of-care tests. So their implementation, like ELISA tests, would be cumbersome and require, obviously, that the person returns. We see, indeed, a significant obstacle in using this vaccine that way. On the other hand side, we are confident that this also spurs the development of a rapid diagnostic test that then could be readily used. But given the circumstances of the data available, this is the way the committee felt was the most appropriate to recommend its use.
Can I ask a follow-up question, please?
Go ahead, please. Go, Helen.
Is there concern among the working group and in the committee as a whole that this decision may, in effect, end up killing this vaccine? If they can't sell it, they're not likely going to make it indefinitely.
For us, the primary consideration is to assure that our recommendation makes public health sense in terms of really assuring the use of the vaccine to maximize public health benefit, to minimize risk. And this has been the outcome. Whether this has repercussions on the manufacturer is something which is secondary. For us, it is very important that we signal in which way we think this vaccine could be used, even though it might not be the options for using it that way might not be available immediately, but maybe in the medium term. And this is for the company to decide in terms of how they cope with this. At the other side, it also helps that the overall confidence in these vaccines remains. So I think at large, this is certainly something that is not having a negative impact also on the vaccine manufacturing side.
Helen, does this answer your question?
Yes, thank you.
Thank you very much. Next question comes from Sarah Wheaton from Politico. Sarah, can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Thank you very much. Can you hear me?
We can hear you very well. Please go ahead.
Great, thank you. Related to the Denvaxia also, is there anything else that should have been done differently in the clinical trials process or in terms of WHO guidelines or anything to avoid having this discovery so late in the game after many people have already received this vaccine?
In reality, what we had to go over when the recommendations were initially made didn't have any of this new information that can only come after the vaccine has been used regularly. So it is impossible to decide the use of a vaccine on non-existent evidence. The two reasons why the vaccine was recommended to be used in children above 9 years of age and in areas of high endemicity of dengue were precisely because there was a concern that the vaccine might behave differently in those individuals that had not been exposed. And certainly there was information in the clinical trials that children below 9 years of age were either not immunized properly or had some adverse effects. So in that sense, that recommendation stands today without any change. Because the vaccine has been used and now we have further information, now we can make an assessment of something we didn't know then, which is how the vaccine actually behaves in people who have not been exposed to the virus. And therefore, we have moved to a new recommendation saying, if you want to use the vaccine, then you should test the individuals beforehand. In the case of areas where the endemicity is above 70%, there could be the use of the vaccine under the terms that we recommended before, because in those situations, the number of people who have not been exposed to dengue before vaccination are probably very few. Still, the recommendation now being made by the working group that was reconvened and reinforced was precisely that there should be a point of care, that means a test done immediately before vaccination that could then detect those individuals that have been exposed to the virus and those that have not, to avoid any of the non-exposed to have a more severe disease.
Let me just add one point in relation to the original question. I think what's very important to note, and when you go back to the vaccine position paper from 2016, WHO clearly identifies a data gap in relation to the performance of the vaccine in this subpopulation, the so-called seronegative. So we have been, obviously through the paper and through various communications with the company, requesting the generation of these data. And I think this is it's a positive element that these data have been generated relatively rapidly thereafter. And obviously, we had to react on the basis of these data generated.
Thank you very much, Sarah. Do you have any follow-up questions?
Yeah. So I'm a little unclear when you say that the earlier recommendation can apply in places where there's over 70% endemic percentage. So what is the actual change? As far as I know, it's really only approved in places that meet that threshold.
Let me clarify. It's correct. The earlier recommendation said in areas of 70% threshold or above. With the new data that have been generated, we have reassessed the situation. We also have commissioned some independent mathematical modeling. What we see is that if you take, so to say, the overall population benefit, you can see robust population benefit if you are in a population where the seroprevalence is, yes, also above 70, but even better, above 80%. Mm-hmm. So this is clearly what we see. However, we are in a new situation because we have no information about individual risk. At that point in time, we made the recommendation for children above 9 years, and this is the indication of the product. Mm-hmm. This was a theoretical risk. There was a concern, and we pointed out to this. Now we have the proof, and we can quantify this based on the data that Sanofi had generated. So one could still, from a population perspective, say 80% above is fine. However, we went into many other considerations that relate to how large of, you know, how many of these populations you actually have that have this high seroprevalence. How do you assess that you have such a prevalence? What are the communication challenges that go with it, and so forth? And that basis, even though quantitatively a vaccination in such a population yields population benefit, SAGE preferred the recommendation to target to do vaccination only on the basis of a pre-vaccination screen.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Dr. Hombach, Professor Kravioto, thank you, Dr. Sarah. Again, to ask a question, please type 01 on your keypad. We have online now. Excuse me for mispronunciation. Quite often, we are not able to get names correctly due to the system we are using. We have online Deveni, and I again apologize. Can you hear us? And please introduce yourself. Do we have again someone online from Minneapolis?
This is me, Stephanie.
Ah, Stephanie.
Hi. Can you hear me, Stephanie Suchet from SIDGRAP?
Ah, Stephanie, I'm really much sorry if we are really having issues with the names, but
no problem.
To hear your voice, and please ask your question, Stephanie.
Okay, sure, no problem. Just call me Stephanie. So you say that the group going back to 2016 was looking at this data gap with younger recipients or people who were dengue naive at the time of vaccination. But I wanted to also know if SAGE has been in contact with anyone from the Philippines and if that sort of also influenced this recent tweaking to the recommendation, because there has been so much going on there in the government and among healthcare providers who are looking at children who may have died after getting dengvaxia.
Thank you for that question. I mean, obviously, we are fully aware of the situation in the Philippines. We have been advising and been in close contact with our regional office, with our country office, and they are in very close contact, obviously, with the authorities. We are, of course, monitoring the situation. I think it is a very important learning also in terms of the communication challenges around benefits and risks of vaccines. I think from that perspective, this is a very important learning indeed.
Thank you.
Stephanie, any follow-up to that?
No, thank you. Thank you.
Thank you, Stephanie. Again, apologize for name. Again, Helen Bransfeld. Helen, are you having another one? Please go ahead.
To ask this question again, because I've been trying to both listen and write at the same time to get something out quickly, and I confess that I am confused by what you have decided. So could you please tell me clearly, is the SAGE saying only use in conjunction with a rapid point of care test, or are they also still talking about it would be okay to use in areas of very high endemicity?
SAGE has gone through the two options very systematically and also tried to quantify these two strategies in relation to the impact that can be achieved. And without going here through the all the details, concluded that the pre-vaccination screening strategy is clearly more viable along a number of criteria. Along the criteria of actually achieving impact, along ethical considerations, risk perceptions, programmatic considerations. And therefore, this is the recommendation that is being put forward by SAGE and that WHO now will consider.
Thank you. And can I ask a question related to the malaria vaccine, RTSS? You gave an update about where the work is going to try to field test that vaccine. It's been 2.5 years since WHO said that should be done. Why is this taking so long?
Okay. Hi, Helen. This is Martin. That's a good question. From the decision to proceed, this was not something that could be rolled out straight away. So three countries were identified where this could be done in a pilot implementation study. But a lot has to be done in those countries to get them ready to be able to conduct this study appropriately and very, very specifically ensuring that they have adequate pharmacovigilance systems set up so that we are able to monitor very reliably with high quality, the first of all, the safety of the vaccine, but also to be able to generate appropriate data from these pilot implementation studies. This is not something that could be done overnight, and it's also taken time to raise the necessary funds to support this implementation study and to, as I said, to get the country, the three countries up to speed.
So what are we looking at in terms of, you know, assuming there's a positive result, and it appears that the four schedule or the four dose schedule can be implemented in the real world, when do you think people might be able to start using this vaccine?
I don't have the timeline in front of me, but the pilot implementation studies are planned to take, I believe, 3 to 4 years. So we are talking about 2022.
Thank you, Helen. Thank you for your questions. I don't see anyone else online wanting to ask the question. In that case, I will thank our guests, Professor Kraviotok, Dr. Hombach, and Dr. Friede, and remind everyone online that audio file from this press briefing will be available, and that short summary of the meeting of the SAGE will be available and posted tomorrow. Thank you very much. Thank you to guests, and wish you a pleasant afternoon.